This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
Part one of the Morning Ag Show brought to you by Farm Credit Illinois, by your John Deere dealer, the Sloan Implement Company, and by Taylor Tire and Auto on West Tyler Avenue, Litchfield. And now with part one of the Morning Ag Show, we join WSMI Ag Director Gabe Osborne.
Thank you very much, Randy, and good morning. Have your grain futures for you from the close on Thursday on the Chicago Board of Trade. Corn for December was down a penny and three quarters to 372.5. March corn was down three quarters to 384.75. May corn was down three quarters to 392.25. Soybeans for November were down three quarters to 888.5. January beans lost a half to 902.75. March beans stayed steady at 915. Chicago wheat for December was up 7 cents to 484.25. March wheat was up 6.5 to 490.25. May wheat was up 5.5 to 494.25. Moving on, soybean meal for October was down 240 yesterday to 290.80. December bean meal was down $2 to 295.60. January bean meal was down $1.90 to 297.60. Finally, soybean oil for October was down 3 to 29.01. December bean oil down 3 as well to 29.17. January bean oil down 2 to 29.42. So to recap your grain futures from Thursday, corn was down 1 to 2, soybeans steady to down 3 quarters, Chicago wheat up 5 to 7, soybean meal down $1.90 to 2.40, soybean oil down 2 to 3 cents. Now we'll move on to the Illinois Department of Agriculture in Springfield for Thursday's Cash Grain Report.
This is Thursday's report of the grain prices and trends prepared by the Illinois Department of Agriculture. Illinois country grain prices were lower on Thursday afternoon. In northern and western Illinois, country grain dealers quoted shelled corn bids were mostly 2 to 3 cents lower at 327 to 356. Soybean bids were steady at 813 to 844. In central Illinois, country grain dealers quoted shelled corn bids were down 1 to 3 cents at 351 to 370. Soybean bids were down 1 to 2 cents at 833 to 868. In the southern part of the state, shelled corn bids were mostly 2 to 3 cents lower at 314 to 383. Soybean bids were steady to down 2 cents at 814 to 854. Illinois soybean processors' cash soybean bids were up 2 to 4 cents at 849 to 884. Basis was up 3 to 5 at 40 under to 5 under the November. High Pro soybean meal on a truck basis was offered at 273.80 to 293.80 per ton, down 240 per ton, with basis unchanged at 40 under to 5 under the November. Illinois corn processors' cash corn bids were down 2 to 5 cents at 373 to 385, with basis unchanged to down 3 at option to 12 over the December. Illinois River barge loading elevators quoted their producer corn bids down 2 cents at 345 to 368, with basis unchanged at 28 under to 5 under the December. Soybean bids ended up 2 to 4 cents at 842 to 851, with basis up 3 to 5 at 47 under to 38 under the November. East St. Louis barge loading terminal elevators placed their producer corn bids down a penny at 359 to 361. These elevators raised their soybean prices 1 to 3 cents, with quotations at 860 to 863. Soft wheat closed up 2 cents at 468 to 470, and Milo ended the day down a penny at 357 to 359. Contract bids to producers for October-November 2019 delivery in the northern part of the state, corn at 328 to 359, soybeans at 812 to 844. Contract bids to producers for October-November 2019 delivery in the central part of the state, corn at 351 to 371, soybeans at 828 to 847. Contract bids to producers for October-November 2019 delivery in the southern part of the state, corn at 314 to 383, soybeans at 814 to 854, and June-July wheat at 462 to 494. That concludes our grain report. This is Katie Lemonager with the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
Thursday's livestock futures finished mixed on the Mercantile Exchange. Live cattle for October were down 5 cents to 109.95. December live cattle were up 25 cents to 108.75. February live cattle were up 27 to 115 even. Feeder cattle for September were down 7 to 141.50. October feeders were up 65 to 143.10. November feeders were up 32 to 141.45. Finally, lean hogs for October were down 35 to 64.22. December lean hogs were down $1.02 to 70.37. February lean hogs were down $1.22 to 76.80. To recap your closing livestock futures from Thursday, live cattle were down 5 cents to up 27 cents, feeder cattle were down 7 cents to up 65 cents, and lean hogs were down 35 cents to $1.22. Now we'll move on and take you back to the Illinois Department of Agriculture in Springfield for Thursday's Cash Livestock Report.
This is the Illinois Department of Agriculture with Thursday Afternoon Livestock Report. Starting with the National Daily Direct Hog Report, calculations for 200-pound park carcass traded 83 cents higher. In a range of $42 to $52 with a weighted average carcass price of $48.99. From the Illinois Direct Sow Report, slaughter sow price were $1 to $2 higher with moderate demand for moderate to heavy offerings. U.S. 1 and 3 grade sows under 400 pounds traded 17 to 20, 4 to 5 weighted 18 to 22, 5 to 6 weighted 20 to 24, in over 600 pounds, $22 to $27. In the Illinois direct hog trade, prices of barrels and gilts, country buying points were $2 to $3 higher with moderate demand for moderate offerings ranging from $28 to $33. Receipts for Illinois barrels and gilts have totaled $33,007. In the direct cattle trade, in the National Daily Direct Slaughter Cattle Report, choice steers on a dress basis traded at $163 to $165. Choice heifers on live basis traded at $102 to $104. And on a dress basis at $162 to $163. From the National Daily Pork Plant Report, trading for retail and processing cuts was stagnant with 384 loads traded. Calculations for a 200-pound pork carcass was $71.54, which is $2.30 higher. From the National Box Beef Cutout Report, values for choice and select beef carcasses were trading mixed. Choice carcasses were $213.51, which is $1.12 lower, while select carcasses were $190.39, which is 56 cents higher. For the estimated daily slaughter under federal inspection, cattle slaughter was estimated 117,000 compared to 116,000 last week, 121,000 one year ago. Hog slaughter was estimated at 490,000 compared to 483,000 last week and 470,000 one year ago. A recap of the Walnut Livestock Auction had total receipts of 310 compared to last week's slaughter. Steers and heifers sold 50 cents higher. Slaughter cows were milked. Slaughter steers choice at 102 to 108 and a quarter. Holstein steers choice at 83 to 87.50. Heifers choice at 102 to 107 and a quarter. Breaker cows averaging at $60 to $66. Boner cows from $45 to $52. And lean cows from $30 to $35. And bulls, ones and twos, from $65 to $71. That concludes our report. This is David Humphreys at the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
And that's all for part one of the Morning Ag Show, brought to you by Taylor Tire and Auto on West Tyler Avenue, Litchfield, by Farm Credit Illinois, and by your John Deere dealer, the Sloan Implement Company. Part two of the Morning Ag Show, brought to you by the CNB Bank and Trust, with 19 locations to serve you, and by CHS, farmer-owned with global connections. And once again, we join WSMI Ag Director Gabe Osborne.
Thank you very much, Randy. And in Ag News for a Friday morning, President Trump told reporters this week that it would be a shame if the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement does not pass through Congress. Speaking during a White House press conference, Trump said the fate of the USMCA is going to be a very interesting question. The White House earlier indicated this week that the impeachment effort by House Democrats destroyed any chances of legislative progress. House Ag Committee Chairman Colin Peterson warned the effort will be a failed process and worried about the chances of USMCA getting through Congress. However, some now say the impeachment effort may give the Trump administration more reason to work with Democrats on the agreement. Further, U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer indicated earlier this week he was confident the trade agreement could rise above the toxic political climate. Lighthizer told Bloomberg News, "On the merits, this is demonstrably good for the people of the United States, and I think for that reason it will pass." Lighthizer is scheduled to meet with House Democrats today. In other trade news from around the world, the trade agreement between the U.S. and Japan is a positive step for agriculture. Michael Clemens has a full report from Washington.
The announcement of a trade agreement between the U.S. and Japan means more market access for U.S. farmers and ranchers, according to the American Farm Bureau Federation. While the agreement itself is not yet finished enough to be signed, the U.S. and Japan Wednesday signed an intent to agree. Dave Salmonson, AFBF Senior Congressional Relations Director, says the agreement levels the playing field for U.S. ag exports into Japan.
For agriculture, the fact that the U.S. and Japan are signing a trade deal is a win, especially for our exports. We already sell about $13 billion a year to Japan in a variety of products, but we're fearful of seeing that erode if we don't have this trade deal.
The agreement lowers tariffs over time on U.S. agricultural products. Salmonson says exports to Japan may increase by $3 billion.
We will be even with our competitors, and we should see good increases in our beef competitiveness into Japan. Pork tariffs are going to go down, have more access for dairy, and our wheat producers were concerned about falling behind our competitors. So the fact that we'll be in there again with the same tariff as other countries should shore up what has always been a very good market for wheat into Japan.
Japan's legislative body must approve the agreement once finalized. Salmonson says farmers and ranchers may start benefiting from the agreement next year.
If the Japanese parliament does everything they need to do this fall, we could see this agreement go into effect on January 1st. And this will also be a really good signal for other countries we're negotiating with that the U.S. can close out trade agreements.
Michael Clements, Washington.
In other news from Washington, the House of Representatives this week passed a bill allowing banks to work with the cannabis industry. Known as the Safe Banking Act, the Secure and Fair Enforcement Act of 2019 passed 321 to 103. However, with a mostly party-line vote in the Democratic-led chamber, the legislation faced an uncertain future in the Republican-led Senate. Sponsored by Representative Ed Perlmutter, a Colorado Democrat, the bill allows marijuana-related businesses in states with some form of legalized marijuana and strict regulatory structures to access the banking system. Perlmutter notes that 47 states, 4 U.S. territories, and the District of Columbia, representing 97.7% of the U.S. population, have legalized some form of recreational or medical marijuana, including CBD oil. The bill was co-authored by Representative Denny Heck, a Washington Democrat, and Steve Stivers, an Ohio Republican. Mike Crapo, a Republican senator from Idaho, who serves as the Senate banking chairman, told reporters he wants the Senate to vote on the measure in the coming month. However, Crapo says he does not support the bill. In news from the Federal Farm Bureau, rural entrepreneurs have until middle October to apply for the Farm Bureau Ag Innovation Challenge. The American Farm Bureau Federation, in partnership with Farm Credit, will accept applications for the 2020 Farm Bureau Ag Innovation Challenge through October 14th. In its sixth year, the Farm Bureau Ag Innovation Challenge is a national business competition for U.S. food and agriculture startups. Entrepreneurs will compete for $145,000 in startup funds. The funds for the challenge are provided by sponsors of Farm Credit, John Deere, Bayer Crop Science, Farm Bureau Bank, and Country Financial. AFBF President Zippy Duval says it takes faith, courage, and creativity to start a business, adding that the funds in the challenge can help entrepreneurs take their business to the next level. 10 semifinalist teams will be announced on November 22nd and awarded $10,000 each. The 10 teams will then compete at the 2020 AFBF Annual Convention in Austin, Texas in January. Competitors can apply online at fb.org. Moving on now to state ag news, the state's farmers are waiting. Federal crop statistics show so far just 2% of the state's corn crop has been harvested, compared to 17% on average. State Ag Director John Sullivan says much remains unknown about the coming yields, but a run of warm fall weather has been helping.
What that crop, how that crop's going to turn out is absolutely a huge question mark. The days that we have right now are what we need. We need heat. We need sunshine. This crop has, especially that late planted crop, has a lot of maturing to do. And if we can keep this kind of weather, that crop is going to do well as well.
Sullivan says everyone's worst fear is an early frost that could damage a later planted crop. But it doesn't look like the frost should become an impact until later October. In other state ag news, deer hunting will ramp up next week around the state. The archery deer season begins on October 1st, and the Illinois Department of Natural Resources is offering a few reminders as hunters get set to head out into the fields and into the woods.
There'll be a lot of bow hunters out and ready to go. And, of course, archery deer permits. Residents of the state want to buy an archery deer permit. You can get them over the counter at places that sell Illinois Department of Natural Resources licenses and permits. Those are available, and they'll be available throughout the season. They're statewide permits, so you don't need to buy it for a specific county. But we want to encourage folks, if they're getting ready for hunting season, and bow hunting deer is the real kickoff to the prime time of fall hunting here in Illinois, that they make sure that, say you're planning to hunt from an elevated tree stand. We want to make sure that hunters get their tree stand installed properly if they need to get that done here in the next week or so before they perhaps plan to be out opening day or in the opening few days of the season. Make sure your tree stand is properly installed, or if you leave it up all year on your own property perhaps, take a checklist out, a safety checklist, and make sure everything is secure and ready. We don't want folks getting up in an elevated tree stand and having a mishap and ending up on the ground. We'd rather that you climb in safely, be secure when you're in that elevated stand, and be safe getting out as well. We want folks to enjoy hunting, not have a trip to the hospital as part of their hunting trip.
That was the IDNR's Tim Schweitzer. He also says if you plan to hunt public land, make sure you check the regulations for the specific site, and if you're hunting someone else's private land, make sure you have their permission, because trespass laws do apply. The two firearm deer weekends in Illinois are November 16th through the 18th and November 29th to December 2nd. More information on hunting requirements is available at dnr.illinois.gov. In other state hunting news, a number of Illinois state parks, fish and wildlife areas, conservation areas, and recreation areas will be open to youth waterfowl during the 2019 youth waterfowl hunting season, the Illinois Department of Natural Resources announced yesterday. Federal sites that fall under the IDNR's waterfowl administrative rules are also open. At most sites, regulations that apply during the regular waterfowl season will apply during the youth hunt. During the youth hunt, the bag limit is also the same as during the regular season. As part of the youth hunt, hunters ages 17 and younger may hunt ducks, geese, coots, and mergansers as long as they are accompanied by an adult at least 18 or older. The accompanying adult cannot hunt these species but may participate in another open season. Youth hunters must have a hunting license, youth hunting license, or an apprentice hunting license. Youth hunters or his or her accompanying adult must have a valid FOID card as well. The supervising adult does not need to have a hunting license if they are not hunting, and youth hunters ages 15 and younger are not required to have state or federal duck stamps. However, youth hunters that are 16 and older must have a federal duck stamp, even if they are using an Illinois youth license. Hunters are not required to have an Illinois duck stamp unless they are 18 or older. Although Illinois youth hunting licenses are available for hunters up to the age of 18, federal waterfowl hunting regulations do not require hunters over 17 to participate in youth hunts. All waterfowl hunters, including those participating in the youth hunt, are required to register with the Harvest Information Program, or HIP. In order to register with HIP, hunters will need to have their hunting license number available. Hunters should register for HIP at the license vendor when they buy their hunting license or by calling 1-888-6-PERMIT. That's 1-888-673-7648 or online through the IDNR website, dnr.illinois.gov. The list of state and federal sites in the local area are as follows. In the central part of the state include Clinton Lake State Recreation Area, the Coffeen Lake State Fish and Wildlife Area, Horseshoe Lake State Park by Granite City, the San Chris Lake State Park, the Shelbyville State Fish and Wildlife Area, along with the Carlisle Lake State Fish and Wildlife Area, and the Kaskaskia State Fish and Wildlife Area. And for more information on Illinois waterfowl seasons, you can check the IDNR's Illinois Digest of Hunting and Trapping Regulations for 2019-2020. Moving on now to local ag news. Yesterday, the Montgomery County Soil and Water Conservation District hosted a conservation tour around parts of Montgomery County. Two fields planted in cover crops were shown to about a group of 45 farmers and other members of the ag community from around the county. Those two cover crop fields belong to Leip Farms just south of Fillmore and Hand Farms just north of Fillmore. Presentations were given in the fields and back at the Extension office in Hillsboro by Abigail Peterson of the Soil Health Partnership and David Kleinschmidt with Progressive Agronomy Consulting Services, LLC. Here today, we'll talk with David Kleinschmidt, who started his own business and began working with cover crops in 2012. Kleinschmidt focuses primarily on soil health by implementing cover crops, no-till, and grazing practices to increase farm profitability.
Yeah, so Gabe, we talked a lot with the rainfall simulator and looking at how that raindrop, when it falls onto the soils of different practices, how those management practices can help control erosion, and also a soil aggregate stability test where we're looking at that soil bed and how much water it can hold before it just kind of falls apart under different management practices. We talked a lot about erosion. We talked a lot about soil health and microbial management in that soil, a lot about different cover crops and the diversity of cover crops, and really how do we address that on our farm, and how do we get these principles of soil health implemented on our row crop rotations as well. So one of the fields we looked at today was a nine-way mix of cover crops, warm season cover crops that was planted as prevent plant, and we looked at what each plant provided to that soil.
And that's one thing that's different about cover crops than a row crop. We think of a row crop, you've got one crop in the field doing its job, a corn or a bean, but with cover crops, you could put in, like as you said, nine different types. For an example, what are some of those warm cover crops that we were looking at today?
Yeah, so that mix, it had, had sorghum Sudan grass, it had pearl millet, flax, buckwheat, sunflowers, sun hemp, cowpeas, mung beans, oats, which would be a cool season grass, but we had oats in there, and radishes as well.
And when it comes to all those different types of cover crops, they all have their own job, but they also have their own way of putting a different nutrient into the soil.
Yeah, so each one of those plants has a different above-ground architecture with different leaf structures that are capturing sunlight energy, photosynthesis, and it's kind of utilizing that energy to pump liquid carbon back in through the root system to feed the biology, the microbes in that soil, for what nutrient needs that plant needs as well. So each plant is going to release a different type of root exudate, which helps to ultimately build soil structure and build that aggregate structure. So our soils are looking more like a chocolate cake or a cottage cheese instead of a platy type appearance.
And that was one thing in one of the tests, the Slake test, I believe it was, where you brought down some clods of soil from McLean County compared to some soil here in Montgomery, Northern Bond, Madison County, and found out that the soil from McLean County that gets constantly worked actually falls apart a lot more than soil from around here, and that opened a lot of eyes as well.
Yeah, you know, that soil up there is flat and black, and everybody thinks about Illinois agriculture just being kind of that type of soil. But as you know, we get further south, and we don't have that high of organic matter. But when we have those roots in there growing longer throughout that growing season, and that farmer, for that other pet of soil that I had from Clinton County, had integrated livestock on that rotation as well. His soil could sit there for weeks and never just fall apart because it has these biological glues, if you will, that hold the soil particles together. So that's critical. That's important when we look at how to manage our soils and keep our nutrients on our fields and out of, you know, the lakes, rivers, and streams and going into the Gulf of Mexico and even our local reservoirs to help with water quality issues that we might face locally.
And then going right along with what we were doing around here, you're also helping out the Highland FFA chapter with their plot, doing pretty well the same thing that you're doing for a few of the local producers in the area.
Yeah, absolutely. I started looking at that plot ground here this spring, and fortunately, I guess, with all the rain, we couldn't put a corn or soybean into it. When I started pulling some soil tests on there, I realized very quickly that that soil was very highly degraded. And I found out, I guess, they'd use that soil for or that plot of land to kind of strip some soil off of it as needed. So it was definitely down to some very tough subsoils. So we put on an 18-way cover crop mix on there, and we're trying to start the healing process, and we're trying to build that carbon back into that soil, so we're making that soil be more productive and not require as much management, if you will, from the nutrient side and everything. So,
and I guess one more question would be, when you go from a field that is, you know, been pretty well just overused and underproduced, I guess, like a field at Highland, and you go 1 year out of a mix like that into a crop, is there going to be a immediate uptick in maybe not just yield, but just overall quality, or is it going to take 2, 3, 4 years down the road?
Yeah, usually it takes about 3 years before we really start seeing huge responses. The first year, though, I mean, on some fields, we'll see some better aggregate stability with those fields and holding together better and to reduce the erosion. But as far as the carbon cycling, that's occurring at that time, but we're not seeing as much of it with the nutrient cycling and the water cycling as what we do about 3 to 4 years down the road as we change that biology in that soil. An interesting thing there at Highland is with those 18-way mixes out there, that soil really showed us where, as we had degraded soils versus maybe a little better soils, what cover crops could handle what type of soil environment better, and really took off on the better stuff, and certain species in that mix just didn't do so well on some of the poorer stuff. So it's kind of, in essence, if we let nature heal itself, that field had some water hemp in the really good spots, and mainly it had a lot of foxtail on the other stuff.
And again, that was David Kleinschmidt of Progressive Agronomy Consulting Services, LLC, at yesterday's Montgomery County Conservation Tour. Moving on now to some local events coming up over the weekend. Don't forget that Sunday afternoon will be the Montgomery County 4-H Shooting Sports. That includes archery and air rifles. That'll be held Sunday afternoon from 1:30 until 3 at the 4-H Park in Butler. Then don't forget that Monday evening will be week 2 of the quilting class at the Montgomery County Extension Office in Hillsboro. That quilting class Monday evening will be held from 6:30 until 8. And that just about wraps it up for this Friday morning edition of the Ag Show. But remember, if you have any ag news for us, you can email it to us at WSMI at WSMIradio.com. So for this Friday morning, September 27th, this has been Gabe Osborne reporting for WSMI Ag News.